G'day, Reece Dowden here, and welcome to another episode of the Selection Bullet Points podcast. And today I'm just going to answer, I've got 15 questions that I've recently received, and I'm going to answer those. Before we kick off, if you're going to be doing selection, or even if you're not going to be doing selection, I've got a good sale going for my redesigned complete package. If you want to check out operatoredge.com/selection, there'll be a link there. But let's get into today's episode. And like I said, 15 questions, and let's kick it off. So the first question, can you explain the process I would go through transferring to Commandos from a role in the Navy or any role outside the Army? Would I do Army recruit school, and what kind of skill training would I receive or require prior to starting any kind of Commando training or testing? Yeah, so Commandos now and it's been like it for a while. It's like SAS, so anyone from any branch of the military can apply. You're not going to be asked to go through Army basic training or, you know, singleton infantry training. I think I've mentioned this before on a podcast. When I did it, I did selection. I did Rio. You still had to be infantry qualified. I think I was actually the last one to do it. I had to go back and do 1 week of infantry training, the digging in week, which was fun, so I could get that qual. But now you don't have to do that, right? So if you're in the Navy, if you're in the Air Force, anywhere outside of the Army, all you'll do is just apply for selection, and then you'll do it like everyone else. Do the SFET, and then you're on selection. I would advise to do the pre-selection course, all right? The 8-week pre-selection course leading to selection, so they're going to be going over all your basic military or soldier skills. And what they're going to assess on selection. So, you know, in regards to testing, you're going to be tested like everyone else on exactly the same thing. So it's up to you to understand and know what they are and be prepared for selection, right? You're not going to be cut any slack because you're non-army or non-infantry, right? You're going to be tested like everyone else. So you need to know what that is, and you need to be ready for it. And like I said, I would do the pre-selection course. Number two, what happens if you apply through SFDRS and don't pass selection? All right, so if you look at the numbers, SFDRS, it is a really hard process. It's a great scheme though, but it's a really tough process. You might only get a handful that get through, get into the unit each year. You might get five, six that finish selection maybe, but you might get two or three that get in the unit. And obviously, sometimes none, sometimes there'll be a bit more than that. But the average is, it's pretty small. You get a lot of people that won't, you know, they start kapuka and they don't even like the Army, so they'll leave. So their numbers are probably a bit worse than they probably should be. I think you maybe get half to three quarters that actually get on selection with injuries and whatnot. So if you don't pass it, they're generally given the option now. They used to just send you to an infantry unit. But I think the guys recently, the last few years, have been getting the option either, do you want to go to an infantry unit and train up there until you want to do selection again, or do you want to stay in Holsworthy and around, to Commando as part of the school special operations. And I would stay in Sydney for sure, you know. Then you're in and around 2 Commando, you get some more training done, understand how the unit works, all that kind of stuff. So I'd probably advise to do that. And then you can do selection the next year, okay? If you opt to go an infantry unit, do that. And again, you'll be able to come back and do selection the following year, okay? Number three is how long until you are allowed to then reapply. Okay, I pretty much answered that just then. But basically, you can apply the next year, okay, assuming you, injuries and everything are good to go and you've been medically upgraded if you had been downgraded, and if you were, if you're asked to come back, okay. If you weren't asked to come back, if you're recommended to not reapply, you might have to actually do some further training to prove that, you know, that you're, that you've ready, that you've undertaken some training before they give you another crack, and you might even have to contact the training cell, the SF training cell at the School of Special Operations and actually ask, write a letter to say that, you know, you've done certain things and can you get another crack? Because if you receive it, or if you don't receive a recommendation to reapply, it can be hard to get back on, okay? But I would contact them and ask them exactly what you have to do to get another shot. They might say no. If they do, well, bad luck, you know, have to move on. Number four, on solo nav phases, how much weight should you expect to carry? It's pretty heavy. It's probably 45 kilos if you add up all the water and the radio and all the rations and the other bits of equipment, okay? So probably 40 to 45 kilos. Number five, are you allowed to wear a GPS during or GPS watch during SFET to ensure pace is maintained for the 3.2 and the 90-minute pack march? I think on SFET you're allowed to. You're obviously not allowed to wear it on selection because you're gonna, you know, your navigation skills are going to be tested. But yeah, you should be able to wear one on the entry test. But then again, you're going to be doing the 3.2 and the 20 clicker on actual selection. So you want to get used to not relying on GPS. And, you know, when I did it, we never had any of that. So you don't want to rely on technology too much. You should be able to gauge how quickly you're going, you know, just by pace and having done it a number of times, okay? 3.2, you can just break it down into, you know, 400-meter blocks. And if you do that and have a time that you need to, that you want to get there at each distance, at each 400-meter interval, the time that you want to get there, and you know, then you should be on pace, right, to maintain it. Same as the 90-minute pack march or the 20 clicker. Once you do it a few times, you'll know your pace, okay? Especially if you're going to employ some kind of, you know, run or, you know, walk shuffle strategy, you should have no problem. You definitely should not need a GPS to make those times. Number six, is 3 months enough time to get fit for DRS? If that's your sole dedication between now and enlistment, just all depends. You know, I'll get asked that question of leading into selection, is 3 months enough? All depends. It can be, depending on what your weaknesses are, depending on where you're starting from. Yes, it can be enough. But if you're, you know, if you're really weak in some kind of areas, running, swimming, pull-ups, you know, it might take you longer. So it just all depends where you're at. And fitness, really, if you're going to be doing DRS, if you think about SF, fitness should be a part of your life no matter what. So you should be starting at a good place. Number seven, being a reservist, how would you go about getting to practice basic section tactics and gaining experience? All right. You know, a lot of people think that as a reservist, you can't get in. I had three guys from my program get through selection last year, and they were all reservists, so no problem. Okay, so my advice is just put your hands up for as much training as possible, and you should be able to get it. Even playing enemy is good, but just getting in there, getting your hands on the weapons, getting your hands on, you know, being able to do courses, and obviously practicing all your navigation. Like I said earlier, you're going to know what you're going to be assessed on, you know, navigation, weapons, first aid, communications, get in there and practice it, all right? Get as much time on the tools as possible, and you should be fine. Number eight, hydration techniques for conducting the 90-minute pack march or the 20-kilometer pack march to maintain the correct weight at the end. How, where to resup, not drink at all, take additional water to ensure correct weight at the end. All right, you're not going to be able to do a 20 clicker without drinking. All right, they will never limit the amount of water. Okay, they're not going to use that as a tactic because it's dangerous. All right, you get as much water as you want. You don't need to have exactly the same weight. You know, if your pack weighs 22, 23 kilos, they're going to give you two or three kilos at the end, okay? So if they happen to weigh your pack at the end and it's, you know, 18, 19 kilos, no problem. They know you're going to drink it, so yeah, they're going to give you that leeway there. But as on a 20 clicker, you're probably going to use, you know, 3 liters, up to 3 liters, up to, you know, a liter an hour. Depending on how hot it is and depending on how much you take or how much you want to consume. And that's an individual thing. You know, I personally tend to drink a lot more water, and that's just me. Other people don't drink much. I remember one of my mates in snipers over in Afghan was sitting in the sniper hide all day, and I think I drank 3 to 4 liters, and he drank a 600ml bottle of water. That was it, okay? So it's an individual thing. You want to test it, all right? Test it and see how much you actually need and how much you need to consume. But general point of view, it's anywhere from sort of, you know, 400 mils, 450 mils up to a liter per hour, depending on what you're doing. If you're just running at a slow pace, it's not going to be, it's probably going to be at a lower end. If you're pack marching with heavy weight, with your full kit on, long sleeves, everything like that, you're going to be, and you're working hard and you're walking fast and you're shuffling, it's going to be upwards towards that liter, at least it is for me. So you want to take that into account and don't restrict yourself with water, okay? It's too dangerous. Nine, keen to know what was involved in your sniper course. Was it a selection process? What was training like? There's no selection process. Like once you're in SF, in Commandos for me, you just put in for it, okay? You put in to do it. Even if you've done, if you're a qualified sniper outside of SF, you still have to do the SF sniper course because there's a number of different components that you'll have to get up to or be trained on and get up to speed. A couple of tips I would say is that, you know, I mean, it's a really hard course. It's, I think for memory, it's about a fifth for everyone in Commandos that tried. Attempted sniper course is about 50% pass rate, which is saying a lot because everyone was already a commander qualified. So it's a tough course, a really good course. I was really proud to get my sniper badge at the end of that. I would say shooting wise, it's just marksmanship principles. You really want to understand those and follow those. And then when you start getting into your building your hide and understanding what hides are and all that kind of stuff, they'll show you what a hide is. You want to get down and see what that looks like, okay? Get behind the scope and see what you need to be able to see from both points. So I remember when I did it, I used to think that, you know, there'd have to be a lot of shrubbery in front of me and I have to be so hidden that the person that was spotting that, you know, wouldn't be able to see me. But in actual fact, you know, when you're down behind the hide, when you have to actually shoot your round, and hit the target, you cannot have any kind of foliage in front of you, all right? Even grass, and obviously especially sticks. If you go to fire your weapon, you know, you're going to miss the target, all right? Anything in the way or in your line of sight that will hinder the round and you'll miss. So what you want to do is get behind the hide, actually see what that looks like, because it looks like when you're in the hide, if you've got it set up properly, you should have a clear line of sight to the target. And you should have foliage in front of you and behind you, offset. But it looks like when you're behind the hide, you think, oh, the spotter's got to be able to see me. But what you want to do is get behind the hide, see what that looks like, and then go and get go up to where the spotter is, and you're going to know exactly where you should be or where you are. Get behind the binoculars, and you'll realize you can't see shit. Okay, so that's probably the biggest tip I would have is follow those marksmanship principles and understand what the height is and how much clear line of sight that you have, and that if you set it up properly, yes, it might look like that they can see you, but they can't, okay, if you set it up well, okay? So understanding marksmanship principles and how to construct a hide are probably my two biggest tips for the sniper course. But if you get a chance to do it, fucking do it, because it's great. Number 10, I was wondering, does everyone get a chance to do tag, and are you limited to how long you can do it? I won't talk about limitations, but yes, everyone gets to do it. And again, it's a really fucking great job. A lot of cool stuff you do on tag, and your skill sets really go through the roof. Okay, so again, once you get in, you definitely want to be doing that. Some people avoid it for some reason. They just want to do a green roll. Maybe that was just when Afghanistan was going off, but definitely. I would advise to do tag. And if you can do it, you know, a lot of snipers will, they're already in snipers, they'll do snipers on tag. But I would advise to be an assault on tag before you become a sniper, okay? Like I said, your skill sets go through the roof, and it's such a great gig. Number 11, commandos or clearance divers? I got this question recently. I'd always say commandos, because if you really want to do the job, if you want to train up for years and actually get a chance to do the job, and, you know, you're going to, SF is going to be probably the first people to get called by government to do something, and you want to be boots on the ground, you want to be, you know, prosecuting those missions, go commandos for sure, all right? Work with a lot of clearance divers, and, you know, if you go down that route, you would actually be on tag as part of the water platoon. But really, like I said, if you want to do the job overseas, I'd go commando every day of the week. Number 12, best nutrition for selection. You know, that's a tough one. You just want to eat a balanced diet and don't restrict anything. Why I say that is that I know there's a lot of fads, crazes of people going around in regards to, you know, all carnivore diets or paleo diets or, you know, no dairy, lactose-free type stuff, gluten-free, which can be great from a health point of view. But the fact is, if you're on selection, you're just going to be whatever. You're going to be eating whatever's thrown in front of you. And if you are, you know, you haven't been eating bread just for health reasons and you don't want to eat that, or you've been limiting dairy leading into selection and that's all you get on selection, trust me, you'll be fucking hungry. You'll be eating whatever's thrown at you. You've got to be used to that. Otherwise, you're going to get a reaction. right? You're going to get sick. You're not going to feel good, all right? So make sure you have a balanced diet that is including all of that and not restrictive, all right? Because you don't want to get sick on selection. 13, best swimming stroke. Interesting one, depending on how good swimmer you are. Most people, especially when you're doing the 400-meter swim and you've got cams on, you've got your shoes on, breaststroke is enough, okay? Or side stroke, but probably the fastest and most efficient is probably breaststroke. When I did it, I would do a 25-meter pool. I was doing one lap freestyle, one lap breaststroke. But, you know, I've done a lot of swimming, did a lot of swimming training, so I could do that. If you're not comfortable, you know, if you haven't done a lot of swimming training, not comfortable or efficient in the water, that's really going to blow you out, okay? You're going to get a lot of lactic acid build up very quickly. So probably best to stick with just breaststroke, and you should have plenty of time, okay? But just on swimming, especially if you're doing commander, pretty much every selection course, police, you know, tactical units, SAS, commandos, all have some kind of swimming element because it's... you know, it's low impact, and they can really elicit that survival factor, keeping you in the pool for a long time. And if you're not efficient, if you're not comfortable, you're going to struggle. So make sure you are good to go in the pool. Okay. Number 14, fitness during basic training. Yeah, a lot of people are worried about this, especially DRS guys. What you want to do is you want to be very fit before you start Kapuka. You will lose fitness, all right, because they just got to. They can only do so much training, and honestly, some of the fitness levels that I remember seeing at Kapuka from, you know, recruits joining the army was fucking atrocious, all right? So they're dealing with a whole range, all right? So what you want to do is just think of it as a break. So go into Kapuka really fit, like as fit as you fucking can. Make sure you do some pack march and condition your body, and then you almost think of Kapuka as a rest to recover because you've been training so hard. All right, you'll lose a bit of fitness, but no problem. You're going to pick that up once you move on out of Kapuka. Okay. And boot preference, always an interesting one. You know, it's hard for me to say. I think a lot of people like the Garmins. I think they're the T8s maybe, but they're the lighter ones that are good for running, especially if you're going to be doing the 3.2. Probably run in those because they're a little bit more like a jogger. I think Solomon's now have been approved as well. The Army's got like 9 or 10 different boots that are approved. And I'm always asked what's the best one. When I was in, I just used the old Terrors, and I actually had no problem with those, you know, when I did selection and when I was in the regular Army, no problem with those. And then when I went overseas, I ended up, a lot of guys were wearing Merrells. But I wore, I think the first trip I did, I wore North Face, and then I moved to Vasque, I think an Italian brand, and just for my feet, they were really good. So that's what you've got to take into consideration. Each boots are made slightly different, and you want to find one that fits your feet, okay, and that's what's comfortable for you, and you're just going to have to try a few on, okay? But if you wanted one, maybe look at the Garmin's, because that's what a lot of people seem to like. But again, test and adjust. All right, that's it for this episode of the Selection Bullet Points podcast. 15 questions there. If you've got any questions, make sure you hit me up. And also make sure you check out operatoredge.com/selection because I've got a good deal running on my revamped complete package. I added a bunch of things in there, and that's going to be running until Monday night as part of the Black Friday Cyber Monday sale, whatever the fuck that is actually stands for, I have no idea, but I'm doing it anyway. So any questions, make sure you hit me up, reese@operatoredge.com via email, or you can hit me up on Instagram, reese_dowden as well. I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Hope you enjoyed the episode, and I'll catch you next time. Thanks.